take your balloons to the next level as we delve deeper into what truly makes a professional balloon artist with your host, Zivi Kivi. Now, welcome to the Balloon Artist Podcast.
Hello, Balloon Artist Podcast Nation. This is Zivi Kivi, and we are in Season 2, Chapter 10. I'm so excited about how this season reveals itself and how it turns up. Today, our interview is with Drew Ripley. I had the privilege of meeting Drew Ripley face-to-face in WEC 16 and watching his awesome sculpture that he and Team Canada created together with an additional awesome, awesome balloon artists. Some of them were already interviewed to this show. And stick around till the end of the interview because there is a competition going on this chapter. So again, chapter 10, 2 weeks of competition, and you can win awesome prizes that will help you in your business. I also want to announce here and now about the next two interviews. Chapter 11 will feature Andrea Noel, and Andrea Noel, gosh, she's such an awesome balloon artist and master twister, and she's also a cool instructor. She taught in Israel and gave an awesome masterclass. I hear that her masterclass and basically her teaching in OSGEM was also extremely well received, and I'm just so happy that she's interviewed for chapter 11 because her research on the topic of comedy with balloons is really on an academic level. Speaking of academic, the Kids Entertainer Academy was launched on the 1st of September, which is just amazing. I hope you check it up. I'll send you all the details on an email because I am going to give a lecture in the Kids Entertainer Academy. It's not free. I admit it's not free. But if you do want to hear about how to handle objections with people that are, you know, trying to buy stuff from you and then are afraid of your prices and how you can overcome that problem and raise your fees much more efficiently and get more people to close with you, then you do want to go to the lecture and attend it. And it will take place on the 13th of September on the Kids Entertainer Academy, and I'll send you all the details about how you register to the webinar, because of course we have some seats available for Balloon Artist Podcast Nation. Apart from the Kids Entertainer Academy that just launched, and apart from Chapter 11, I also want to mention Chapter 12 will feature Danny Schlesinger. Danny Schlesinger is a balloon performer and a well-received one, but also a director for balloon artists that has a performance. So this unique chapter at the end of the season will just blow your minds. Stick around till the end for the competition and see you at the other end. Hello, Balloon Artist Podcast Nation. This is Season 2, Chapter 10. And today, with me, I have Drew Ripley from Canada. If you're not familiar with Drew, then you probably didn't go to WBC 16 because the Team Canada in WBC 16 made such an impressive medium sculpture that had so many details and so many surprises in the forms of even moving sculptures and like a 3D experience that you can walk all around the sculpture, and everywhere you go, there's something interesting from Canada in balloons. So Team Canada was a team of five very talented balloon artists, and Drew Ripley was one of them. And Drew uses balloons to entertain, but he uses balloons in a very special way. It's not like the usual cookie cutter where you use balloons for restaurant work, or you use balloons for balloon shows, or for entertainment with kids, just front show entertainment. He actually has something entirely different. So we will learn everything about that and what Drew does with balloons. So hello, Drew Ripley.
Hello there.
I want to give people the value of really understanding that everything is possible with balloons. And you found a very original way with Gertrude to entertain people with balloons. So tell us, what is Gertrude?
Gertrude is a giant ostrich. She stands roughly 10 feet tall. I use her in parades and fairs and festivals. She's a fully animatronic puppet. She's got working mouth, working eyelids, and she can blink. She has a voice box and will talk to people. And she and I and her trainer, we all go out and just interact with people, and it is an absolute hoot. It's an amazing creature and something I'm really, really happy to share and be part of.
Gertrude is actually quite cute. Like, when you look at it, she has a huge beak of an ostrich, but her entire body is red with lots of, looks like mostly quick-lick balloons. And it's just so magical to watch you ride it. And it looks like you're very tall when you're activating Gertrude. So how do you do that?
Gertrude is quite tall. She's based off of 3 foot stilts to get the legs. And then you've got, it is a primarily a quick link body, because I wanted to create something that wouldn't take me forever to make every time it was time to go out. There's lots of other bits to it. There's 260s mixed in there. There's a solid metal frame that I have to work on that's developed to brace into my arm. I had to get into textiles as well to make sure that I could make legs that work, things that work around my hips. Obviously, this entire project is based almost around my waist. Everything from the saddle that goes over it, and I've got some fake legs that go over top of it, so that, you know, if you're a small child and you look up and it looks like I'm actually riding the bird and you can't see my actual legs, which are the stilt legs themselves. She took a lot of time to get to this point. Balloons are a funny thing when you start saying, okay, these balloons have to move all the time, as opposed to just being handled and manipulated into a structure. And I absolutely love it. It is by far my favorite thing to do right now.
And when did you make your first Gertrude?
About a year ago. She's gone under a full year of evolution. And it's really, really important that you do keep refining, because the first Gertrude that I made, she had a different look, still the same sort of shape and same structure. Barely had the mechanics working, like the mouth worked, and that was basically it. She was horribly heavy, and I mean ghastly. The saddle that we'd made was a beautiful looking saddle, but was very heavy. We tried strapping it in with balloons to see if we could actually get that to stay on, and so on. And the end result was she was close to 55 pounds of mass that was attached to me. Plus, I had additional weight on my arm, which is where her neck is based off of it, and all the mechanics in her head. So if you're wearing 55 pounds of material and you're walking on peg stilts on a somewhat lumpy field, you're going to get one heck of a workout. But out I go, and you know, my wife's with me. She's the trainer, for Gertrude's trainer, so the handler, I suppose. And that person is super, super critical, because you do have small children around, and sometimes they want to do things like run up and give Gertrude a hug at her legs, and that's quite scary when you're on stilts, so you always have a good trainer with you. So out we go, and we're at like a company fair, and the response was unbelievable. We had a massive crowd around us. We basically... We flipped that event on its head, because everyone just sort of stopped and wanted to see what this bird was all about. So at that point, I had her voice working. I discovered who this Gertrude character was. She's quite mischievous. She would be able to, you know, reach down and steal cotton candy from kids, and then the kids would find that funny, because of course a moment later she would let out this massive burp, which, if you're five, a burping ostrich is the best thing ever. We also discovered that sometimes parents at events, they sort of blank out and they want to talk to other parents. And the funniest thing you can do, if you've got this bored little child wondering when mom or dad's going to stop talking and move away, is slowly move Gertrude's head into the conversation of those two until one of them jumps. Now, one parent will jump and the kid will fall on the ground in pure laughter, just because it's so amazing. It was unbelievable. You know, the experience was amazing, and we kept going for about an hour, and then, you know, I got back to the car, and basically to take this costume off, you have to sit down on the roof of your car, and my wife's trying to help me get all the bits off, and I got into the car, and I was exhausted, but exhausted across the board, like everything from the physical side, which, you know, you've got this heavy object, but also the emotional side, because the response was astonishing, absolutely astonishing. So from there, we knew, I knew it was like, okay, I've hit something, I can do better. And we just kept improving. We improved the beak, we improved the mechanics, we got our eyebrows working properly. If you look at Jim Henson characters, you can think of a whole bunch of them, but typically all of his characters have a working mouth and they have some kind of working eyebrow system, eyelids, something that's fluffy and moves around. Henson was always big on sympathetic movement. So sympathetic movement means that if your creature does one thing, there's a chain reaction of movement. So the fluff on the top of Big Bird's hair, Big Bird's head, she's got little feathers that stick out. Or Snuffleupagus, who had the long hair and moves. Or Animal, who's very fluffy. His head is very fluffy. So he moves, and then all the fur on the top of his head moves. That kind of movement is really, really important to bring it in. And it just gives more life to your character.
So how did you implement that into Gertrude?
There's a couple ways. The eyelids themselves, because they're mechanical, I did use a small amount of a feather boa, basically, to give that effect. I'm still trying to figure out a way to make that out of balloons, but it's very difficult because I've got all this metal working to get the eyelids to close properly. The top of her hair, though, is a whole bunch of essentially tulip twists. You put like two dozen tulip twists up top, and you make sure that your stem of the tulip twist is actually inflated, and then you've got some support there. It's not just hanging dead. The tulip twist, you want to make sure that they're inflated and you've got some strength in the stem. And then the tail, I'm still working on the tail. The tail is a smaller quick link, so I'm using the 6-inch quick link. And it's kind of like a peacock tail, but I expanded them out so that they're individual fingers, basically, of balloons, individual quick link links. So if I take a step forward as Gertrude, you've got the hair moving and you've got the tail, it sort of bounces a little bit. And when we stop moving, the head on her hair is still moving, her tail is still moving, plus then whatever actions I'm providing as the puppeteer.
Of course, we will put pictures of Gertrude on the show notes on balloonartistpodcast.com so people can admire the looks of it. But I just want you to, for now, I want you, the listeners to try to picture something. So picture a huge costume bird that Drew is in the middle of the costume, and he has fake legs, so it looks like he's riding this huge bird. And this huge red ostrich that is actually quite cute. And he has fake legs, which are basically his stilts. And those legs are the legs of the bird. So it looks like a person riding a huge bird. And because it's so tall, you can see it from afar. You can look at it and admire it. And also the head of Gertrude moves towards people in such a majestic way. So it's just something that you need to try now and imagine. And I have to ask you, do you get reactions from adults just as well as from kids from Gertrude?
Yes. And that's actually the biggest moment that I knew I hit something. Typically, I make lots of complicated balloon structures, just as many of us do, and quite often the parents are thrilled with whatever the child gets if you're doing like a balloon lineup. And one of the things that I decided a few years back was that if I was going to be really good at this, I had to break through to the hardest demographic, which is teenagers. If I could make a teenager smile or laugh or whatever, then I was on to something. Adults too, especially adults without children. Right. That's a big catch. If they're with their kids, they're going to partake in the activity because they're the parent, because they want their child to have a good time. If I can hit through to an adult who's not there with a child, then I know I'm doing really well. The last event I did, Summer Lights in downtown Kitchener here, it's a very late festival. It started at 8 o'clock and goes until 1 a.m. So at 8 o'clock, you've got lots of kids around and families, and that's very predictable. I know how to work with that audience. That's a very normal audience for me to work with. But by the time you hit 11 o'clock, it's just adults there, and that was the thing that actually was most remarkable. We're on the main street and we're walking down at 10:30, and it was crowded. Like we, you know, you'd make it a couple steps and then we would stop. The languages that were being spoken around me were definitely not English. I couldn't even list all the different languages that I was hearing, but we were able to communicate enough through the puppet and through, my trainer, Linda, the bird's trainer. I always refer to Linda here as the trainer, to have the person say, you know, something positive, wow, amazing, you know, some sort of adjective that they knew in English, followed with photo, and the cell phones would come out and, you know, there'd be some positioning or whatever. Sometimes Linda would take the phone so she could get photos. I must have walked only about at most a kilometer over the 3 hours because I couldn't move faster than that. There were simply too many people stopping and asking for photos.
Wow. And you also use a lot of puppeteering techniques because you are being mischievous, you create engagement. So how did you learn puppetry?
I would say because Jim Henson is just amazing, and at 7 I'm watching like everything I possibly could of his. I have some friends that are puppeteers as well, and that has definitely helped. There's also a lot of me just sitting at home with Gertrude, her head made in her neck, and playing with it with a mirror. Remember, as a puppeteer, so I'm standing, you know, I'm pretending that I'm riding on this big bird. I can't see her face. I can't see her face and what's happening. I can only see the back of her head. And you'll see that in the photos. So the only way that I can see the front of her face is if I either have someone come with me and take a big pile of photos, which I've done on a couple times, or if I use a mirror. And I've done both. And through that, you start developing a character and you start seeing how she reacts. There's a few specific motions I know which can stop someone that's, you know, 20, 30, 40 feet away. Because again, if I want to, because this is an ostrich, I need 10 feet of clearance. If I don't have 10 feet of clearance, my head doesn't clear the ceiling. But Gertrude can reach much, much higher. Her head can go up, I would guess, somewhere around 13, 14 feet in the air. At that point, you have a bird that's looking a long distance away. Her eyes are about 6 inches in diameter. They're very large. And she can spot people that are sort of glancing over to see what happens. Now, as a puppeteer, I know the best way to capture someone from a far distance is I am actually an actor. I have to be looking somewhere else, and the bird has to be looking somewhere else. She and I have to appear independent. So she's got her head way up in the air because I know there's a family off in the distance that spotted us, or there's a person who's looking over like, what is that? What's going on? So I'm now controlling Gertrude and having her blink at this person and tilt her head funny and make sure the feathers or the tulip twist balloons that I refer to as feathers on the top of her head are wiggling around. Meanwhile, while that's happening, I got to look at a family or a person on my other side and talk to them as a human being. It is a very interesting challenge, but it's totally, totally worth it. And I've been working on that really, really hard because I know the power it has in creating reactions. Because, again, there's a story happening and other people are watching what Gertrude is doing and what I'm doing, and they're just enjoying that as a show.
Wow, just that you say, by you saying that she tilts her head, I can imagine how this weird-looking bird is looking at me and is making faces for me, and I would just be hypnotized by her look if it was like in real-life scenario. So I can definitely relate to that. And, you know, I'm doing a little bit of puppeteering myself, so I know how when there's a shy kid and my puppet is also shy, it just opens that kid entirely. So do you have any situation where, like, small kids were able to also enjoy Gertrude? Are they afraid of her because of her height?
That was something I was kind of concerned about because this is such a large character. I was worried that it would startle a lot of people. And generally, I don't have that issue. When it does come up, because I have a trainer on the ground, the easiest thing to do is to have Gertrude interact with the trainer. So you have a child that's frightened. Well, Gertrude's head is going to get nice and close to my wife, and they're going to have a nice little snuggle, or she's going to rub her or something like that. And that sort of makes the child go, okay, well, maybe this is okay. The other thing, I work with two people when I'm on the ground. The other woman's name is Princess, and both of them are excellent at this. My wife's excellent. Princess is excellent at this, at explaining to the parents what to do to help the child. For heaven's sakes, don't take your child and throw it in the bird's face. If they're already nervous, that's disastrous. So we don't want that, because I don't want photos of upset children. So having either one of them say, hey, well, just pick her up, and maybe parent, maybe dad or mom or grandpa or whatever, you come up and touch Gertrude and show the child that it's okay. The thing is, people don't always know how to behave, and it's important to give them cues on how to do this. As professionals, we are out in this world doing this all the time. We are used to seeing how parents or children react and so on, and we want everyone to have a really good time. So we put a lot of work into how the trainer would respond to the public, how they would both keep me safe, but make sure that everyone is having a good time. And when you do have that scared child, that there is a way to interact with them and make sure they have a good time.
Do you also interact as the rider of Gertrude?
Yes.
And so it also includes, basically you have routines where Gertrude is in communication with you, or engagement with you, and Gertrude is with engagement with Linda or with Princess, with its trainer, and also with the audience, the people on the street. Like, it's like a full show when people are coming and watching you.
When you as the puppeteer are one of the actors, it's kind of like having a split personality. So you have to be a performer, your bird has to be a performer, your character has to be a performer, and you have to act as if you're two separate individuals, even though you're not, and it feels kind of weird sometimes. But a good show means that you are. And then you have whoever else is with you. And in my case, I have either Princess or my wife. And I have talked to festival organizers like, oh, well, we can get you a kid instead and save you money. I'm like, no, not a chance. These people are trained, they are professional, they must be with me, and yeah. Today this is the person who's available.
Nice. Did it happen to you ever? I imagine a lot of people are considering using balloon puppets. Yeah, there is a trend for balloon puppets. You can see, like, Mike Floyd was on season one. So Mike Floyd had this video clip of a snake puppet for balloons, and it was witnessed, like, people viewed that YouTube clip for an incredible amount of times, like 100,000 times, because people wanted to, like, reverse engineer and understand what is this balloon puppet. And I feel like a lot of people are afraid, like I have this fear by myself, that if I do a puppet which is made from balloons, maybe during the act, one of the balloons will pop. So did it ever happen to you, and how do you tackle this fear?
Oh, I'm absolutely frightened of this. I'm actually horrified by the thought that one day some small child will touch her beak and the beak will just go kaboom and it'll, you know. But I always have balloons in my pocket. My trainer knows how to fix the bird right on the spot. And we've talked about this. The main key is that if something pops, you are prepared for it and you talk to the audience about it. So let's say the disaster does happen and I have a child come up and whacks Gertrude in the beak and the beak goes kapow. The beak is double stuffed beak. That's how I've done it now. Originally, I tried some weaving patterns. I didn't like any of them. And now I've got this double stuffed beak. So it's actually pretty tough because you've got that outer shell on it. If it were to burst, the main thing to tell the child is, oh, it's a balloon. That happens. At which point the trainer is able to fix it on the spot. Now, on a longer event, I've got spare beaks. I've got spare beaks sitting back in my tent. And it's no big deal. I can scurry back there and shove one on. But there is an important amount where it's less to do with the balloon and more to do with how you interact with the person so that they don't feel bad. You don't want someone leaving going, oh my God, I just killed the most amazing thing ever. It's a balloon. It's, you know. Other parts.
Did it ever happen to you?
Remarkably, no. I have lost tulip awesome. Twists. I have lost, a couple of the quick links. But that's not a big deal because there's so many of them. Whenever, yeah. You know, no one cares. And the beak, I mean, I have redesigned this beak, oh goodness, 20, 30, 40 times. I can't even imagine the number of times I've done it, partially just because I didn't want this issue. So when I first tried doing weave techniques, the weave techniques had the advantage that you could lose a bubble and it wasn't disastrous, but the odds of losing a bubble were reasonable. I had to come up with a way to double stuff these balloons and get the physical mechanics inside the balloons too. And there's everything with how you prep that to make sure there's nothing sharp and it's all smooth and it, you know, glides on and all this kind of stuff to make sure that it doesn't pop. Will it pop one day? It might, but I'm ready and so are my trainers.
I feel like this is the, you know, fear from balloon popping. Yeah, if you're afraid of balloons popping, you're in the wrong business because that's what we do. We like a balloon might pop in your show. A balloon might pop after you gave a wonderful balloon hat in a party. And yeah, in a decor situation, your topper balloon might pop or whatever. So I feel like you have the advantage of being a professional, of being up there in the sky with your tilts and of protecting Gertrude, and you do have your backups. So yeah,
I have a decor story that actually fits here, and I don't do a lot of decor, but I was doing an installation 3 foot rounds with a new assistant, and she mostly does things in the office, and she's an amazing person. We're walking in, last piece. This is the first time she's carried one of these columns with a big 3 foot round on it. Walks into a busy store, 3 foot round explodes. Now, in that circumstance, you've got a few people that jump, and it was totally random, like 100% random. Maybe there was a thin spot on the balloon. We don't know, but I know she didn't do anything on purpose. She didn't hit anything. And, you know, you could see her, the poor woman, she just turned white as a sheet and felt absolutely horrible. I'm like, it's okay. It's just a balloon. You know, and I looked at the few people that were nearby, and I'm like, it's okay. So we go out, and we fix it, and she looks at me, and she said, I'm so glad I just didn't yell a swear word. and that's what matters. Like, it's how we react. When I do balloon lines, of course things pop. When I do my balloon shows for birthdays, of course things pop. And so, you know, I may be aware, maybe at a balloon party, I see there's one little kid and her hands are over her ears. And I'm like, okay, this child is a little bit more nervous. Don't make things pop on purpose. And if you do have some pops coming, tell her, hey, this one might pop. But the other thing that I do when balloons pop is I make sure I scream louder than the kids do. And that just seems to help. And I always warn them at the beginning. It's like, balloons might pop because they're balloons. But if they do, don't worry. I'm going to scream the loudest. And that always goes over well.
Oh, man, that's such a cool idea. I love it. I understand, Gertrude, like I don't understand anything, how you make it, but I understand how it looks. So how did you get into animatronics and all of this structure that you put inside? It sounds like knowledge that you can't find on YouTube.
No, this is definitely not a YouTube creation. Now, that said, you can go online, you can just look at great stilt costumes, and there's a million different wonderful stilt costumes out there. And I had been playing with some stilt costumes. The first costume I ever did was it was actually based on characters here. We have Oktoberfest is very big in the city. So I took two of the main characters and stuck them to the bottom of my stilts, put their hands in the air as if they were holding up my feet, and then I made a giant balloon tuba for me to wear, and then the rest was just a fabric costume, and I walked around it at one of the Oktoberfest events. That one was actually pretty straightforward. That was quite literally take some balloons and figure out how you're going to stick them on a pair of stilts. And it is kind of weird because you've got, in this case, you have a creature who's got a stilt leg going right through the center of it. But I knew I could do more than that. Now, the big thing that this area has is a makerspace. And if you're in a city with a makerspace, I have one very simple question with it. Why are you not a member yet? There is so much knowledge at a makerspace. A makerspace is a place where people design and hack and build all sorts of crazy things. It's typically a hub of artists and creators. And I went in there. I decided, well, you know, I've got all these tools there. Maybe I should apply to be an artist in residence. So I did that and got in. And within a couple of weeks, I was like, this place isn't about the tools. Yes, there's amazing tools there. There's laser cutters and 3D printers and every heavy, you know, tool you can imagine for cutting things. But you've got this incredible community of support. So maybe your city doesn't have a makerspace. Fine. It does have a community of artists somewhere. Go find it. And that's where I started learning. So over the last 2 years, I've learned how to weld. I didn't know how to weld before I went to the makerspace. I know how to use a laser cutter. I know how to use 3D printers. Any big tool you see in a heavy lab, I can use without issue, because again, there's all these people that I can interact with. And of course, I'm giving back to them too. They're curious about things. I've held workshops. I've helped them with business. I do whatever I can just to try and give back to that community. So, you know, I started charging down this path, and at first it's like, well, maybe I can weld two bits of metal together. And then before long, you start adding your unique style to these new skills.
Wow, this is actually such a valuable tip. I never even imagined that there are those places like makerspace locations where you can meet with other artists and other craftsmen and share the same tools. Like, it makes sense that that the world needs those places and that it is useful. And I just never imagined such a place existed in real life. And this is such an obvious idea and just makes so much sense. So did you learn animatronics there? Like, does this require a lot of money investment to buy all those things for animatronics?
I did learn a lot there. I've learned some on my own too, and I'm always learning. So Quartz Lab is filled with a lot of electronic people. There's definitely a good clump of that. And so when I first started thinking about, say, her voice box, my thought was, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to get someone to design me some fancy board, and I'm going to have to do all this crazy work, and it's going to be super hard. I don't know what I'm going to do. Sometimes the answer is super easy. And the key here is that when you don't know, well, often you'll get friends, well, why don't you look it up on Google or whatever it is? Well, you can only look it up on Google if you know what the search term is, and that gets really hard. And so it was almost like going into this place using it as a reverse dictionary, where I could go to someone and say, how do I make this? I don't even know what it's called. And they would say, oh, you need, and they would list off whatever the technical term is, and maybe they would point me to the right source. In North America, Adafruit is a great company, and they are loaded with kits, and they're really not that hard to put together, particularly if you can find someone that knows the basics of soldering, or you can find the kit and go to someone who knows a bit about computers or Arduinos or something and say, I'm thinking of this. Can you help me assemble it? Does this make sense to you? The key here is that, like, there's a University of Waterloo in town teaches engineering. It's a brilliant university. It's a well thought of university. I don't have the time to go back to school and spend 4 years learning how to be an engineer. I got to make a thing, and I want to keep moving. So the only way you're going to be able to do this is to find a coach, a mentor, a friend, someone who can say, you know what, I think all you need is this, give it a try. And then you're going to have to experiment a bit, and you're going to go back and forth until you finally get it. It's like anything. You're going to have a lot of failed attempts and so on, but you can find the answers.
So eventually you're using all kinds of kits and build Gertrude out of existing animatronics solutions. Is that right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's the great thing about makerspaces too. They love hacking apart things that pre-exist and turning it into something else. So, you know, there is probably a way where I could have spent a few $1,000 to try and make the mechanics all work, or I could spend a couple months thinking and buying bits of scrap material to make the mechanics work. There's lots and lots of different parts out there that you can get. You have to think about it. Makerspaces are great for getting you to think differently. So when you walk into, say, a hardware store and you see a drill, I'll say a drill. A drill is a small motor that spins in a circle. The typical reason that people toss drills is because the batteries die. Well, guess what? The motor's still okay. Take the thing apart. Do it safely. Make sure you don't zap yourself or anything like that. But take the thing apart. You now have a working motor. Not only that, you have a powerful working motor. It just needs a battery. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to turn it into a helicopter of some kind? You can. And that's how you have to look at it. You have to look at an object like a drill and say, that's not a drill. That's a whole bunch of cool components I can do something with. The new drills come with lights. There's all sorts of funky things that you can do. And it might have just been found in the trash can. If you look at... reachers, a really great one to look at. If you go to a medical supply stores have all sorts of great things. You have aluminum because there's light crutches that are made of aluminum, walkers and so on. You have devices that are designed to grab up high so that you don't have to reach or climb ladders, things that help with balance. These are all things you can use to change yourself, to make, say, your arms longer, to extend where a mouth might work. A grabber is a great way to come up with a basic mechanic for a puppet.
What is a grabber?
They call them grabbers. Remarkably, if you go into Google and you type grabber or reacher, it'll come up. Imagine you're 98 and your joints don't work so well and you need to get the jar off the top shelf. You are not going to climb up a ladder. You're going to use a grabber that's going to reach up and grab it.
I see. That's super cool. And so you basically, it sounds like you're playing Lego or something.
Oh, it's absolutely Lego. This is totally Lego. I see balloons as Lego too. You know, I've been fortunate enough, I've worked on a couple of the giant origami projects and I was with Larry Moss and Kelly Cheadle building a castle once, and I'm like, holy smokes, this is basically inflatable Lego. And you know, this castle comes together. And when you go into a makerspace and you start taking that attitude in, well, they're all excited because I guarantee you go to a makerspace and you tell them you're a professional balloon artist, their jaws are going to fall off and say, you're a what? That's amazing. And in you'll go, because they'll be part of that diverse community. But then they'll start showing you all these crazy bits that you can hack together and bash together and whatever. I mean, we were trying to figure out a way to make the mouth be more stable. We wanted her mouth to either be always closed or always open, because it came with a spring. And the way the mechanics that we had worked is that her mouth was always open, and I didn't like that. So I have options. I can go out and spend a fortune, or I can sit there with someone who's really good at metal and come up with a solution. And I'm really, really lucky. I've got Ryan Consol is one of the members there, and he's a phenomenal cosplayer. He does a lot of gender crossing cosplay and a lot of metal smithing as well. And he and I just sat there for like an hour and came up with a solution out of the scrap bin to keep that mouth closed all the time. It's a little switch that I operate with my thumb. Yes, it's very much like Lego. We have bins of bolts and screws and scrap metal and whatever. It's like, well, if I take this bit and I add this bit to it, maybe I can make it do this. And there's your answer. It's no different than when you're playing as a kid and you're digging through the bin looking for that perfect piece to make whatever the object was.
Sounds like you're having fun. Were you always like that? Can you like share us how did you get into balloons?
I actually give a talk on this. I suspect most people have the same experience that I do as a balloon artist. You go out and the most common question I get is, how did you get into this? And in my case, I was 10 and my mom was all excited. We were doing a big family vacation. We were going to go down and see the Grand Canyon, do the California trip and see geography. You know, it was going to be amazing. But we flew in and out of Vegas because that was the cheapest place to fly at the time. It's the 80s. And she decided that since we had an extra day in Vegas, we'd just hit all the shows. So we hit the shows, and you know, I'm seeing David Copperfield and Ziegfeld and Roy in their heyday and a unicycle troupe. And I come back and I'm hyper, you know, and I'm like, you got to give me a magic kit. I really want this. So this stuff starts coming into my life. And I go through years of doing it part time. I've done birthday parties quite literally since I was 10. I've had a magic show since that long, and now it's developed into, I would say, 90% balloons. It is a way to play. I struggled for a long time with the idea that entertainment, being an entertainer, was a valued thing. The reality is, it sure is. If you look at how scary the world is, if you pop open the newspaper and read it for 30 seconds, or you know, scroll through whatever's going on, it's a pretty frightening place. And I realized that my purpose was to distract people from that, to give them a positive moment. And it was a long journey for me to realize this. I bumped into a great talk by Simon Sinek about Start With Why. And it's by far one of the best things I think you can ever watch when you're thinking about what is it that you're doing and why are you doing this and so on, because you have to answer that question. Why are you doing the thing that you do? And I realized, I'm doing this because I want to share a positive moment with people. I want to take them away to a wonderful place. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I want them to remember this. And I want them to remember this more than whatever the negative headline was. And so that is actually the driving force for me, whether it's a balloon lineup and I get 2 minutes with a small child, or if I'm running around with Gertrude and I get, you know, a little bit longer with a clump of university students or whatever it is. I want them to have a wonderful, magical moment. We're going to have some fun, and I hope more than anything that you're going to remember this and it's going to stand out.
Wonderful. Like you mentioned the Simon Sinek video YouTube clip about, there was a TED talk that he did about how to start with why, and it's such an inspiring video, and I'll embed that into the show notes in balloonartistpodcast.com so that people can take a look at the video and be inspired. It's such a good video clip. And so how did this lead? Like, I understand you got into magic shows and you got into basically entertainment. How did you make the decision about Gertrude? So what was the reason? Why Gertrude?
I've always been interested in balloons. I actually learned from a book from the 80s about how to do single balloon objects. And there's actually a real skill in that, to actually be able to make a whole list of single balloon objects. I like making whatever the child asks. I don't use menus. It's pushed me as an artist, which I think is really important. And so there's a natural development where I just kept making harder and harder things. But more than that, I found when I was looking around that there were too many entertainers that were too similar. We were all doing the same thing, and that's bad for all of us. We need to be able to distinguish our talents a little bit more, to be a little different, because it's going to help the client as well when they say, well, what do I want? With Gertrude, it was more a combination of all of my skills being put together and coming up with something that would be really different and would be really special. That was the thing that I kept thinking about when I was trying to design this. It was, what am I going to do that's going to make me different? Because the reality is, if I'm different from the other entertainers, it's good for them too, because it means choices.
So being unique was the main value, I see. You mentioned that Gertrude has been through a lot of steps of evolution. And I feel like, in a sense, like it became more and more unique as well the more you worked on it, on improving Gertrude. So can you tell us a little bit about the evolution of Gertrude and what you've learned from doing that?
Yeah, of course. So the first one we made, you've got a balloon structure, we've got stilts. I didn't have legs at the time. My stilts were actually open. You could see my feet on stilts. The saddle that we made was made out of vinyl, and it was quite heavy. It looked beautiful, but it was very heavy. Her neck worked quite well, but her eyes and her jaw, the eyes didn't work, and the jaw was not very effective. You had to really look and say, oh, look, the jaw actually moves, as opposed to what you really want, which is a person saying, holy crap, it's a bird. So that was my first attempt, but it was positive. I also used black quick links because it's what I had. And of course, black outside in the sun, not the best choice. It's not going to last as long. From there, I just wanted to get the mechanics right and get that head working. Costumes and characters, you've got to have an amazing face. You've got to have a face that works. So I kept designing different ways to make the mouth work and make the eyelids work, and eventually the eyelids work. Once the eyelids worked, the character became much more animated and much more alive. Then I discovered that it was all the balloons tackled around. Like, whatever puppet mechanic works, in my case, I've got an extension arm that actually makes this jaw work. So your mechanics, you're going to have to figure out a way to get around that hinge point, and that's where most of my experimenting was, because a 260 is big, especially when you're dealing with a hinge that maybe the pin for your hinge is like, you know, 2 millimeters or less than a 16th of an inch. And so there was a lot of work trying to come up with how to get around that. I would say, like I said, 20, 30 times just trying to redesign the balloons so that the hinge would work properly and the balloons would actually move. There's no easy answer here, because without knowing what the creature is, I don't know how the jaw is going to look. You just have to keep experimenting and accept that the first 20, 30 times, it's not going to work. You're just going to keep doing it until you get it.
This is amazing. A quick note. This is amazing because really you had this vision of how you wanted this to look like and how you wanted this to work. And you didn't give up. You didn't say, oh, this is good enough. You kept on evolving and practicing, basically, and changing it until you got to see something that you like. And I bet that you're still improving it.
Oh, very much so. I'm very happy now with how the jaw works. I'm happy with how her eyelids work. I need to make the sound box work better. We changed the saddle from a heavy vinyl material to a very light fabric. My shirt is actually part of the saddle, so there's less parts that have to be dealt with when we assemble. Because that's another thing too, how many helpers do you need to get this thing on? And I had one event where it took two different people to help me put all this stuff on it. We were at it for like 45 minutes, and I remember thinking, okay, that's got to change. We can't spend 45 minutes getting this on with two other people. Right. So now I actually did a show with her. I was an MC at a juggling festival in town. And my wife and I, we were able to do a costume change from my balloon outfit right into the Gertrude Bird in under 7 minutes. And I was thrilled. And not only that, that was backstage. So there's noise issues that you've got to be careful about. So that was a huge, huge win.
Wow. And what about the time it takes for you to create Gertrude? Like, can you tell me in the evolution of Gertrude, how much time do you need to spend for each version of Gertrude in order just to build it?
My first version took me 2 days.
Wow.
The version I have right now, I can make the head in about an hour to an hour and a half. The whole structure I can do in under 3 hours.
I see. And this is also, for people that are listening, this is the kind of dedication, this is the kind of investment that people are willing to go through in order to have a piece which is unique and so remarkable. And remarkable, that's the word. Like, people will see Gertrude, and just like your goal is to make people remember and to give people an experience. When you're looking at Gertrude, even in the pictures, you cannot forget her. It sounds like quite a challenge in many ways, on the engineering level, on the artistic level, on the entertainment level. But is it also, it sounds like also a challenge on the physical level?
Very much so. Especially that first one, which is like 50 pounds, goodness. And you're wearing all these layers, and it's summer, and you're sweating, and boy. You know, we sometimes forget that we have to look after ourselves. We're entertainers. This is a physical job. You know, I used to work at a tile shop years and years ago, and all you had to do there was actually lift a heavy object and move it, and then you had a moment to take a break. If you are in a balloon line, I do lots of balloon lines, you're active. You're expending calories. You're really busy. This character, I'm up on stilts, and I've been working on the mass. I've got her down now to about 13 kilograms, still 30 pounds. That's still a lot of weight that I've got to wear, and I'll be wearing it for, you know, longest set so far was 3 hours straight. So, yeah, there's a physical component to this, and I've been working out now for quite a while. I had a fabulous moment almost 2 years ago, I guess about 18 months back. I'm at an event, and I also have a tiny bicycle. It was Coker Tires Mini Monster for anyone that's big on monkey bikes and circus bikes. And this is a thing that I would offer to clients if they wanted just something goofy. I could zip around a trade show or whatever on this tiny bike. And I'm finding the trade show is a little bit slow. It wasn't a very busy one. And I came across a training company, and the trainer looked at me and he said, "You feel pain here, here, and here, don't you?" And he was absolutely right. And he said, "I can help you with that, because if you let me do that, you're going to be a better performer." Now, of course, trainers are expensive, and you're thinking, how am I going to throw that kind of money around? So there's a couple tips to get out of this. Number one, when you're making a sale, don't ask once. It took him 7 or 8 times to ask me to work with him before I said yes. He called me a couple times. We spoke a couple times, and he just said, "Let me help you." So imagine that. Imagine asking a client that's on the fence 8 times to be hired. And I finally said, "Okay, we'll give it a try." I was in reasonable shape when we started. At least I thought I was in reasonable shape. I wasn't, I'm doing okay. I'm not out of breath when I go up steps or whatever. And we started doing a lot of physical training with my legs and my arms, trying to find weak spots. I guarantee you everyone has weaker muscles and stronger muscles, so you become unbalanced. And when you start dealing with stilts, the more balanced you are, the better off you're going to be. And we had a moment where we did a wall sit. Now, a wall sit's when you basically squat and you lean against a wall. And I had to hold it for 30 seconds, and I was just about dead. This is only like a couple weeks in. And he handed me a small bit of Lego. And I tell you, the Lego couldn't have been more than like 50 grams, you know, like talking about a tiny, tiny amount of weight. I just about died having to hold my arms out holding that. I just about fell over. It had to be done. A year and a half later, I lift lots of weights now. I don't see my trainer nearly as often. I don't need to. He told me at the beginning it'll take about a year to go through this process, and then I just won't need him as much. And he still checks in, and we do weigh-ins and stuff like that. I saw a nutritionist. I learned how to eat properly. I've got some dietary issues, so I had to be really cautious about that. And I basically put it all together as a package and said, you've got to do this. Now, it sounds crazy when you say, wow, you've been working out for 18 months, and you throw all that money in a trainer or whatever. Well, you know what? It started with just being fun. Before I met the trainer, we were playing on the Wii Fit. It was something. Wii Fit isn't the most amazing fitness program ever, but it is something. And if you're having fun and you're burning calories, well, good for you. You're at least staying active. Now, I'm able to run around on Gertrude. I'm able to dance in the streets and play with this giant bird without issue. And my trainers are both very physically active, too. They're in phenomenal shape. My wife went through an entire transformation using the trainer as well. You can do it. You just have to keep at it for a long haul. And you have to decide, where do you want to put your money? What is it that's actually important? In my world, because of my dietary restrictions, people would often say, oh, well, can you have a cheat day or whatever? No, actually, I can't. That will hurt. So I'm entirely lactose intolerant. This is not something I get to cheat on, because if I do, I can't perform tomorrow, and I exist to perform tomorrow. I want to give people that moment. That's why I get out of bed. So you learn that certain things are important to you, and you make the decisions and you charge along with it. We had challenges along the way too. Like, I was basically, every penny I had was going to the trainer, and I didn't question it because I was seeing incredible results. But he said, look, we've got to get you some free weights somehow. Take your time and find, you know, online. Go to Kijiji. Kijiji's kind of like eBay or Craigslist here. See what you can find. If you're patient, you can find all sorts of crazy stuff. My weight set, we bought it for $400. No, we bought it for $200 Canadian. An entire weight set came up used, and it was way bigger than we needed. So I kept all I needed, sold half of it off, and got my money back. There are ways of doing it. You just have to be patient. I found some weights that people were throwing out that were from the 70s that they didn't want anymore. And I asked my trainer, are these going to work? He said, perfect. That's all you need. Apple juice can. Heck, throw those around for a bit. They're heavy. There's ways, you know, there's always ways to expand. And it's an interesting thing when you go from thinking you're in shape to actually being in shape, all of a sudden you get to do the crazy stuff. And it's a big help.
Wow, this is so inspiring, because treating your body and understanding that your body is just a key component in entertaining people, that's so important. And how often do you work out these days?
I put in about 10 hours a week right now. I'm usually up at 5 o'clock in the morning. We've had some nice scheduling changes with summer and so on. So my preferred time to work out is actually first thing in the morning. Both my wife and I'll do that. I'll throw some weights around. She'll be out going for a run. I actually added the Rock Clock to my phone. If you don't know about Dwayne Johnson, get the Rock Clock. It's free. It's amazing. I have either him saying beep, beep, beep in my ear to get out of bed, or he's got one that I love. It's actually a crowd of people cheering you on to get out of bed, which is so nice to have in the morning. Now, there is a catch. There's no snooze, so you better get out of bed. So, yeah, every day it's about, you know, hour and a half, a lot of stretching. Make sure you stretch, especially as we get older. I hate to admit it. I'm no longer a teenager. I don't even think I'm in my 20s. Your muscles will get tight. And even after a long day, if you've been on your feet, you've got to stretch your legs out, or you're going to have your joints banging up against each other and causing grinding problems and all sorts of pains. Stretch, 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 stretch.
How about training and exercises that are related specifically for Gertrude? What do you do for that?
A bazillion squats and lunges. squats are a tricky thing. I'm really glad I learned how to do them properly, because if you do a squat and your knee comes out in front of your foot, you can really damage your knee. So we learned how to do squats with her trainer. We actually had to use chairs for balance at the beginning to actually get your body position right. I was trying to do some of the calculations to understand how much I had done, and it was a phenomenal number. I mean, I only have one leg day a week right now, and even in that leg day, I will do 200 squats and another 80 or so lunges. In addition to that, stilt work takes a lot of outer leg work. This is where your IT band is. It's called a IT band is the common term. It's a very thin muscle. This is not a muscle that you can make big, because there's just not much there in the first place. But I do a lot of crab walking with an elastic band around my leg, a really thick band. I do a lot of side lifts as well. And again, you have to learn how to do that properly so you're actually exercising the right muscle. And I stretch it all the time, because you have to have a really good set of leg muscles to make stilts work for a long period.
Wow, awesome. So what kind of things did you learn about operating Gertrude by operating a balloon costume on stilts for so long and evolving with it and creating content for it? So what did you learn except for the actual need to exercise and train yourself?
You have to see characters like this as part of who you are too. You are projecting yourself. Your attitude controls how the show is going to go, your attitude during the show and leading up to it. Failure is a very real thing. And I can tell you, when I went through the training, the physical training, there are times where it was hard. I mean, it was very hard. There are times when I was trying to get the head mechanics right with the balloons that I just couldn't get it right, and it was driving me crazy. And there's a wonderful community of balloon artists. I've got lots of friends that could say, this isn't working, what do I do? And they give me some feedback to try and help me find different ways. Once all that's together, out you go into the street. You're ready to perform. You have to remember you're on. Like the moment you step out of your car, you're on. People see you, and you've got to be ready to be positive and be happy and get over the concept that this might have been hard, or you might be nervous, or what the heck's on with the ground. If I had sat, 2 years ago and said, "Meh, it's too hard to get on stilts," well, I wouldn't have achieved this. It's not that it's too hard. It's that you have to do statements. So if I say something like, I did 200 leg squats this morning. Well, if you're not actively working out, that sounds like an impossible number. That's not where I started. I started doing a wall squat trying to hold 50 grams worth of Lego, and I thought I was going to die. It's a long process, and as long as you commit to yourself, and it goes back to knowing why. I know why I do this, so I can keep pushing. And you'll have a good time out there. You'll have, you're going to make some amazing thing, and you're going to step out there. And I had the first time I got photos, Gertrude was about halfway through her development, and I got these photos back of little children interacting with her face. This is stuff I can't see as the user. I can't see the other side of Gertrude because her head is quite large. It's about, maybe a foot and a half in diameter, 30, 40 centimeters. And I couldn't get over the emotional responses I was getting out of these children. And it was emotional for me when I discovered that level of impact. I knew I was doing a good job, and I knew I was getting cell phone photos. I didn't realize I was actually, really breaking through. And I was like, well, I'm just going to keep going. We're going to make this work. I don't care how hard it is. I can do this. I will trip and fall a few times, but it's going to work. And so we keep evolving.
Love it. We're running out of time, and I do want to tell the listeners about the competition that we've discussed about in advance. So the idea is that we want to support you through, we want to support Gertrude, and we want to get Gertrude's name out there. So if you help us, you will be able to compete in a competition, basically, and maybe win some really cool prize. We'll tell you all about the prize in a second. So tell us, Drew, what people need to do in order to compete.
Right. So Gertrude has a hashtag called Gertrude and Friends, and I'm actually developing a handful more characters that will be related to Gertrude. They will be her friends, but the friends also represent the people that she interacts with, because I want people to feel that they're part of this, at least somehow connected. So what we need to do is we need to get statements out there saying that you really want to meet Gertrude and Friends, that you're excited by the concept and you want to see this crazy bird in actual physical form in front of you.
So if you go to Facebook and you write this post like, I want to meet Gertrude, and you put the hashtag Gertrude and Friends, then we will be able to find you basically with the search of that hashtag. So after 2 weeks from when this air lives, we will go through all of the people in the hashtag and choose one person that made the hashtag comment, and one of you will win two of my ebooks. So you already probably familiar with my ebook, The Champion Building System. This ebook is like about 1 year old, and I just released a new ebook about search engine optimization. And the new ebook is just, I just give everything away there about how to do SEO. All the tactics that are actually working now is in that ebook. Those two ebooks together are yours for free. If you are the one that is chosen, that you did the Gertrude and Friends hashtag. So go on to Facebook now. Stop your car now. Make a post, I want to meet Gertrude. Do the hashtag Gertrude and Friends, and you're in these raffles. Drew, I have to say, I really appreciate your time with us. I feel like you gave so many cool ideas about training and about the evolution of your unique entertainment piece. And gosh, I just hope I will meet Gertrude soon, and one day in person. I have a good feeling I will meet Gertrude soon. Gosh, thank you so much for your time and for the inspiration for other people and for being so open and sharing about everything.
Thanks, Siv. This has been a lot of fun.
So what should people do if they want to learn more about you, Drew Ripley?
They can find me on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Drew Ripley Entertainment. And anyone's welcome to comment, send notes. You know, I do what I can to respond to requests and chatter and so on. And if I can help point people in the right way to create their own creative wackiness, I'm all for it.
Awesome. And we'll also put links to a link to your website on our show notes. So go ahead and go to balloonartistpodcast.com and learn more about Drew Ripley from there. Drew, you've been awesome. Thank you so much. See you, everyone.
Thank you.
That was such a fun interview. I didn't even know before speaking with Drew Ripley that there is such a place called Makerspace. And, you know, living a healthy life and maintaining your health is definitely something that I'm interested, especially lately, ever since I started my Pavlok diet, where I electrify myself whenever I see pizza. And by the way, lost 14 pounds. Wow. I want you to hear David K. Silly Billy. He's a magician from United States. He wrote a book that really influenced my life. The reason I call myself Zivi Kivi is because I wanted to be like Silly Billy. And he just came up with a new book. I want you to hear all about it. And then stick around to the end, because I'm going to mention the prizes and the competition. So here is David K. Silly Billy.
Hello, Balloon Artist Podcast Nation. My name is David K. You may know me as Silly Billy. I'm a full-time children's entertainer from New York City. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I love it, and I still love it, and I love working with kids. I want to tell you about two different things, two different books. I wrote two books. The first book is very interesting. It's really about techniques to entertain children. Okay, so there's chapters on using comedy. There's chapters on using interaction, keeping the kids interact with your show. There's stuff about how to keep the adults entertained and keep them quiet while you're doing your show. It's really great. And I'll tell you, I get emails from all over the world, from teachers and from balloon artists and face painters and everybody that is storytellers, people who work with children. They learn so much from this book. This book is called Seriously Silly. It's been out for a few years, And I cannot tell you how many wonderful emails I get from people who tell me that it's changed their lives. My favorite is a guy said he put his three kids through college using the material in my book, you know, in that he made a great show and his show got better and he got more business and so on. The other thing you need to know when you're a children's entertainer, especially if you're in a competitive market, you want to differentiate yourself from your competition. So let's say you're a balloon artist and you want to offer something else that your competition doesn't offer. You could do a few magic tricks, one magic trick, two magic tricks. But just saying something like that on the phone or in your email to a client or a potential client, this is going to set you apart from your competition. One guy does a balloon show. Second guy does a balloon show, and he also does some juggling and he does some magic tricks and things like that. And that, I think, helps sell you better. And if you're looking for that, you can get my brand new book, which is called Supersized Silly. This is a book with 150 plug-and-play magic routines. The routines that are in this book, they do not require any fancy sleight of hand. Basically, the props that are used in this book, you can buy from any magic shop, and they basically work themselves. There's nothing to learn about being a magician. These are 150 routines from 100 different magicians from around the world, and they gave me the best routines they had, and the words that you say are in the routine, how to do the trick, the mechanics, all the jokes, everything, including theory, which will help you learn to understand what it is that you're doing and why it works. The new book is called Supersize Silly. You can get both of those books from my website, which is called sillymagic.com. So at sillymagic.com, you can get one book, Supersize Silly. The first book, Seriously Silly. You can see there's a pattern there. And seriously, you will learn how to be a better entertainer for children. So I hope you check that out. I'm David Kay. Thanks for listening.
Okay, that was Silly Billy, David Kay. Please take a look at your emails, because in the email that I will send you, you'll see the content upgrade from Drew Ripley. You can also download it on the website, and it's a really cool content upgrade. Drew made you like a 30-minute, well-edited video that has details about how to maintain a healthy life and how to train yourself to be stronger, and that's really cool. Thank you, Drew, for that. And if you check your email, you'll also see this very special link with an invitation to the Kids Entertainer Academy with special promotion for just the next few days. Really, like maybe even when you go there with the link, maybe the promotion is gone. So I apologize if that happens, but it's still worth your effort to check it up. Because really, it's going to be an awesome. David Kay will lecture in the Kids Entertainer Academy in the beginning of October. I will lecture on the 13th of September, 2016. So check that out, please, and make sure you open my emails. They're just full of lots of content and bonuses and fun. And some offers as well. And you know, this is a restaurant. We need to sometimes order some desserts. I would like to offer you an opportunity to win a prize. And the prize will be one person from the Balloon Artist Podcast Nation will get two ebooks. And the ebooks will be one with the Champion Building System ebook that I have for more than a year now. And it's on its latest version. It's about 45 pages. And one of them will be my SEO guide. This is currently about 15 pages, but I have another 15 pages that I am actually working on expanding the SEO ebook. And those are SEO tactics that are working and that are current and are up to date and they are cool. So if you get those two ebooks and you read them and you take action on them, your business will improve. And those things are the actual things that I do and the actual things that I teach in the Modern Automated Balloon Business course, also called as MAPC. So you get the two ebooks for free. And the way that you do that to compete is that you go over to Facebook and you write down, I want to meet Gertrude. And you add the hashtag Gertrude and Friends. If you do that, 2 weeks from now on season 2, chapter 12, I will find everyone that did the hashtag Gertrude and Friends, and I will pick one randomly and send him the two ebooks. So really, it's 20-30 seconds of work go right on Facebook, on your wall, write down, I want not on a Facebook group because the hashtag needs to find you. Yeah? So write on your wall, I want to meet Gertrude, and then hashtag Gertrude and friends. Right? If people want to see the pictures of Gertrude, you can use the hashtag to see some of them. And they are awesome. And you do want to meet Gertrude. I want to meet Gertrude. We all need to meet more Gertrudes in our lives. So Gertrude and friends on the hashtag, you might win 2 ebooks that will boost your business. And I am thankful for you for your time. I will see you in Kids Entertainer Academy or just next week on the Balloon Artist Podcast. See you guys. Hello, Balloon Artist Podcast Nation. This is Zivi Kivi, and this is Season 2, Chapter 10, The Tip Section. The Tip Section. Okay, so, sorry for that. Gosh, the tip of today is a resource that is not free. But it costs $3, and it will save you so much time. So, this is a tool called clippingmagic.com. I'll put the link on the show notes on balloonartistpodcast.com. What this clippingmagic.com tool does is you basically separate a part of the picture from its background. So for example, if someone takes a picture of you and there is a background of kids, you can delete the kids really, really easily and quite efficiently. You just color you in green and color the background in red, and it's so easy. It takes 1 minute to do this, and it's so accurate. It's amazing. And it looks transparent, so you can put it on your website. And you can combine in Canva a few pictures with you looking nice and transparent on your background and put that on top of a picture of smiling kids. And, you know, it just looks very professional. So clippingmagic.com, you can buy 15 credits for about $3 or $4. I became addicted to this. I'm just using it all the time. You can take pictures of balloons and take out the background and make it look good instead of, you know, with your towel or your sheets at the background. You can get rid of those and put it on top of something else like a professional. And you don't need Photoshop or expensive software. You know, working with Photoshop to achieve this takes a lot more time and it's a lot more expensive if you buy a Photoshop license. The tool clippingmagic.com is very fun. Fiverr guys charge $5 for this, for doing 1 or 2 pictures. You can do here as like 15 pictures for $3 or $4, and I highly recommend you check it up and work on your marketing. Thank you everyone, and see you next week on the Balloon Artist Podcast.